Because the subject material of One Step Beyond is fascism, and the focus of the program is fascism, international fascism, and the U.S. national security establishment, and because it is my considered opinion at this stage of the game that we are going down the very same road that Italy and Germany went down. In fact, that's been my considered opinion for about 25 years. I've been saying that on the air for 15 years plus. When I began saying this, unfortunately, an awful lot of people looked at me like I had a penis growing out of my head. They did not want to hear about it. Yeah, their reaction. I have a lot of people now that have hung in there over the years who say, you know, 10 years ago I listened to you and I thought you were nuts. Now I see what it is that you were talking about. Well, it is to be hoped, I guess the saying better late than never applies in that context. It is to be hoped that enough people can get busy. Enough people will become active, enough people will wake up to prevent a catastrophe. This is something that I read on the air periodically to allow people the opportunity to measure the extent of the society's descent into fascism. This is something that is a description by the part of a college professor of what it was like to live during the rise of Hitler. What was it like subjectively, or what it was like subjectively, I should say, to live under the rise of Adolf Hitler? And I read this periodically so that people in the listening audience can effectively gauge the extent to which their lives, their daily lives in the United States in the late 20th century, have become subjectively like the lives of the people who lived under the rise of fascism in Germany, because the same bloody goddamn thing is happening here in the United States right now. If people in Weimar Germany and in the early part of the early years of the Hitler regime had a resource like this program, perhaps the tragedies of Hitler's Germany might have been averted, but unfortunately they did not. The book from which I'm about to read is entitled They Thought They Were Free, subtitled The Germans 1933-45. This book was authored by Milton Mayer, last name M-A-Y-E-R. It's published in softcover by the University of Chicago Press and copyrighted 1955. It is, as I said, a series of interviews with people who had lived during the rise of Hitler. Some of them were supportive of Hitler, some of them were opposed to Hitler, some of them were initially opposed to Hitler and then it became co-opted. And then in a chapter, appropriately and ironically enough, chapter 13, a chapter entitled, But Then It Was Too Late, a college professor who was opposed to Adolf Hitler from the beginning, but who eventually went along with the program, who eventually became comfortable, who eventually became assimilated into the growing Nazi culture and Nazi society, relates his experiences, his subjective experience of what it was like to view the rise of Hitler. I think that many members of the listening audience will recognize parts of themselves, parts of the society they live in, parts of the society that they're about to be living in as they listen to this chilling account. In this chapter, again, chapter 13, entitled, But Then It Was Too Late, Milton Mayer interviews this college professor. And the chapter begins, quote, What no one seemed to notice, said a colleague of mine, a philologist, again quoting, was the ever-widening gap after 1933 between the government and the people. Just think how very wide this gap was to begin with here in Germany, and it became always wider. You know, it doesn't make people close to their government to be told that this is a people's government, a true democracy, or to be enrolled in civilian defense, or even to vote. All this has little, really nothing to do with knowing one is governing. What happened here was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand, or so dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. Let me pause for just a minute. How many things have you heard explained by the U.S. government as necessarily being kept secret because of, quote, national security, unquote. Now, the society being described here is not the America of Richard Nixon, or is it? It's not the America of Ronald Reagan and George Bush, or is it? This is Germany under Hitler, wasn't it? One more time. What happened here was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand, or so dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. And their sense of identification with Hitler, their trust in him, made it easier to widen this gap and reassure those who would otherwise have worried about it. Interrupting again, think about Ronald Reagan. Think about Smiling Ronnie and all of the horrible, horrible things he did. But people bought it because Ronald Reagan basically came across as your good old Uncle Al, and he'd get up there and he'd hold that, he'd kind of cock his head to the side and say, well, gee, I realize that this is illegal and unconstitutional and a lot of people died, but what the heck, I can't really go into my description of it because of national security, and so on and so forth. Once again, and their sense of identification with reading once again from They Thought They Were Free, and their sense of identification with Hitler, their trust in him, made it easier to widen this gap and reassure those who would otherwise have worried about it. This separation of government from people, this widening of the gap took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure or associated with true patriotic allegiance or with real social purposes. And all the crises and reforms, real reforms too, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath of the whole process of government growing remoter and remoter. You will understand me when I say that my middle high German was my life. By the way, he was obviously a professor of German. Continuing, it was all I cared about. I was a scholar, a specialist. Then suddenly I was plunged into all the new activity as the university was drawn into the new situation. Meetings, conferences, interviews, ceremonies, and above all, papers to be filled out, reports, bibliographies, lists, questionnaires. And on top of that were the demands in the community, the things in which one had to, was, quote, expected to, unquote, participate that had not been there or had not been important before. It was all rigmarole, of course, but it consumed all one's energies, coming on top of the work one really wanted to do. You can see how easy it was then not to think about fundamental things. One had no time, unquote. Continuing. Those, I said, are the words of my friend the baker. One had no time to think. There was so much going on, unquote. Your friend the baker was right, said my colleague. The dictatorship and the whole process of it coming into being was above all diverting. It provided an excuse not to think for people who did not want to think anyway. I do not speak of your little men, your baker and so on. I speak of colleagues and myself. I speak of my colleagues and myself, learned men, mind you. Most of us did not want to think about fundamental things and never had. There was no need to. Nazism gave us some dreadful, fundamental things to think about. We were decent people and kept us so busy with continuous changes and crises and so fascinated, yes, fascinated by the machinations of the, quote, national enemies, unquote, without and within, that we had no time to think about these dreadful things that were growing, little by little, all around us. Unconsciously, I suppose, we were grateful. Who wants to think? Interrupting again, just think about how many people you know who don't really want to think. And so they really don't think. They just go ahead and participate in the things that everyone is, quote, expected, unquote, to do. Continuing. To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Please try to believe me. Unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness, acuity, than most of us had ever had occasion to develop. Each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained or on occasion, quote, regretted, unquote, that unless one were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood what the whole thing was in principle, what all these, quote, little measures, unquote, that no, quote, patriotic German, unquote, could resent must someday lead to, one no more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing. One day, it is over his head. How is this to be avoided among ordinary men, even highly educated ordinary men? Frankly, I do not know. I do not see even now. Many, many times since it all happened, I have pondered that pair of great maxims, Principis obstan, finem respice, resist the beginnings and consider the end. But one must foresee the end in order to resist or even see the beginnings. One must foresee the end clearly. And certainly, how is this to be done by ordinary men or even by extraordinary men? Things might have changed here before they went as far as they did. They didn't, but they might have. And everyone counts on that might. Continuing with, they thought they were free. Your little men, your Nazi friends, were not against National Socialism in principle. Men like me who were are the greater offenders, not because we knew better, that would be too much to say, but because we sensed better. Pastor Niemöller spoke for the thousands and thousands of men like me when he spoke, too modestly of himself, and said that when the Nazis attacked the communists, he was a little uneasy, but after all, he was not a communist, and so he did nothing. And then they attacked the socialists, and he was a little uneasier, but still he was not a socialist, and he did nothing. And then the schools, the press, the Jews, and so on, and he was always uneasier, but still he did nothing. And then they attacked the church, and he was a churchman, and he did something, but then it was too late, unquote. Yes, I said. You see, my colleague went on, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even talk alone. You don't want to, quote, go out of your way to make trouble, unquote. Why not? Well, you are not in the habit of doing it, and it is not just fear of standing alone, that restrains you. It is also genuine uncertainty. Uncertainty is a very important factor, and instead of decreasing as time goes on, it grows. Outside in the streets, in the general community, everyone, quote unquote, is happy. One hears no protest and certainly sees none. You know, in France or Italy, there would be slogans against the government painted on walls and fences. In Germany, outside the great cities, perhaps there is not even this. In the university community, in your own community, you speak privately to your colleagues, some of whom certainly feel as you do. But what do they say? They say, it's not so bad, or you're seeing things, or you're an alarmist, unquote. Or, as one hears in my field, you're paranoid, or you're a conspiracy theorist, quote unquote. Last couple of sentences again. In the university community, in your own community, you speak privately to your colleagues, some of whom certainly feel as you do. But what do they say? They say, it's not so bad, or you're seeing things, or you're an alarmist. And you are an alarmist. You are saying that this must lead to this, and you can't prove it. These are the beginnings, yes, but how do you know for sure when you don't know the end? And how do you know or even surmise the end? Interrupting, we now have a lesson of history, and so as we hear these words describing the German experience of 1933 through 45, we are in a position now to know the end. We do not have the excuse that this professor had. Continuing, on the one hand, your enemies, the law, the regime, the party, intimidate you. On the other, your colleagues poo-poo you as pessimistic or even neurotic. Again, interrupting, you're paranoid, or you're a conspiracy theorist, or I don't believe in conspiracy theories. How do you know for sure when you don't know the end? Continuing, on the other, your colleagues poo-poo you as pessimistic or even neurotic. You are left with your close friends who are naturally people who have always thought as you have. But your friends are fewer now. Some have drifted off somewhere or submerged themselves in their work. You no longer see as many as you did at meetings or gatherings. Informal groups become smaller, attendance drops off in little organizations, and the organizations themselves wither. Now, in small gatherings of your oldest friends, you feel that you are talking to yourselves, that you are isolated from the reality of things. This weakens your confidence still further and serves as a further deterrent to what? It is clear all the time that if you are going to do anything, you must make. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and smallest, thousands, yes, millions, would have been sufficiently shocked if, let us say, the gassing of the Jews in 43 had come immediately after the German firm stickers on the windows of non-Jewish shops in 33. But of course, this isn't the way it happens. In between come all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next step. Step C is not so much worse than step B, and if you did not make a stand at step B, why should you at step C, and so on to step D, continuing. And one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy, and some minor incident, in my case, my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying, "Jew swine," collapses it all at once, and you see that everything has changed and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were born in at all. The forms are all there, all untouched, all reassuring. The houses, the jobs, the shops, the mealtimes, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays. But the spirit, which you never noticed because you made the lifelong mistake of identifying it with the forms, is changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear, and the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed. Now you live in a system which rules without responsibility even to God. The system itself could not have intended this in the beginning, but in order to sustain itself, it was compelled to go all the way. You have gone almost all the way yourself. Life is a continuing process, a flow, not a succession of acts and events at all. It has flowed to a new level, carrying you with it without any effort on your part. On this new level you live, you have been living more comfortably every day with new morals, new principles. You have accepted things you would not have accepted 5 years ago, a year ago, things that your father, even in Germany, could not have imagined. Suddenly it all comes down all at once. You see what you are, what you have done, or, more accurately, what you haven't done. For that was all that was required of most of us, that we do nothing. Unquote. Well, that sense applies to every member of the listening audience. Are you going to do something, or are you not